And I just immediately thought, wow, this sounds amazing. I just remember it made the hairs on my arms stand on end. And then basically Phil just came to visit me and said, do you want to work for us? They're all really nice and sweet and generous and kind and just pretty self-effacing, and they've not really changed.
Welcome back to the Human Podcast, where I delve into the minds of a wide range of individuals by asking about their lives, careers, and ideas. If you enjoy the show, please consider hitting the subscribe button below.
Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined today by Debs Wild. Debs is also known as the lady who discovered Coldplay after spotting them playing in 1998 whilst working as a scout for Universal Records. And Dev has since worked in various roles for Coldplay for about the last 20 years. So yeah, Devs, thanks so much for speaking today. It's great to have you here.
No, well, thanks for having me.
So yeah, I want to go back to like that first night that you encountered Coldplay. Can you tell us the story of how that all kind of happened?
I can. And for anybody that thinks they know this story, as in Chris Martin's version, he tells a better story, but this is the true, the true version. I was working for Universal Records based in London. And even though I'd literally just practically moved from Manchester to London less than maybe a year before that, I'd never heard of the Coldplay, which is what they were called. And they were playing part of in the City Music Convention. And because I'd never heard of them, I had a list of 54 bands and thought, well, I need to see this band because I don't know who they are. And it was Monday, it was raining, and I walked in, and I think they must have been about one song into a set. And I don't remember what that song was. I just remember it was really quiet and thinking, gosh, sort of can hear a pin drop. Which that might be the only thing I've misremembered, because there were quite a lot of people there. And all I know was there's a bit of, you know, how there's a gap at the front of the stage, no one stands at the front, and I stood there. And then there were a few industry folk, and then lots of people at the bar at the back of the venue. So I stayed for the rest of that show, maybe 20 minutes, and I did see people leave. But it just seemed to be a lot of people around their age, maybe friends or students or whatever. And I just immediately thought, wow, this sounds amazing. It was more a feel and ambience. It wasn't songs at this point. It wasn't like I didn't hear a hit. There was no Shiver, no Yellow. I think looking back, the likelihood was it would have been songs from the Safety EP. So Ode to Deodorant would have been on there as well. And Such a Rush and Bigger Stronger and No More Keeping My Feet on the Ground. And had a Push, Panic, which became Don't Panic. So that was probably the set. There was another song called So Sad, and that could have been played. But at that point, I had no reference, so I don't know for sure. We've never really confirmed that between us, but that was the first time I saw them. And I had to dash off and see another band. So handily, Phil Harvey, their manager and friend, had left a card on the kind of cork board on the way out. And I just grabbed it and thought, I'll park that and get in touch when I'm back in London in a few days' time, which is what happened. But yeah, that was the best thing I saw over the few days. So
what was it about them that you spotted it? Because I think I've seen a line as well that you saw a couple of other scouts there that maybe left during the gig. So yeah, what do you think it was that you saw that others didn't?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind why people were leaving. And I'm saying that in the plural, because that was not the first gig I saw people leave at for them. When they did eventually get some industry attention months later, people were still leaving. And it was the same reason. They looked dreadful. And Chris chatted between songs that some people didn't like. And, you know, he kept missing his cues and bashing into the mic. And it's very clumsy performance-wise. And I think people just, because they didn't have hits, not that any song, you know, we don't know what a hit is until we, you know, it's a hit. But I feel like they didn't really have the repertoire to go with the fact that, for me, it was the style, I would say. I thought the, I did say this to them, excuse me. I did say to them at the time that they reminded me of Jeff Buckley. And Chris looked a bit offended. So I thought, oh God, he hates Jeff Buckley. But I think he was more bothered that he didn't want to be compared to someone else. And they'd already had the, oh, you sound like Radiohead. And so I think that was what bothered him about that, because he loved Jeff Buckley. But it was, his vocal was different then. It's kind of higher, the octave type thing, more falsetto. I just remember it made the hairs on my arms stand on end. And that's all I want music to do anyway. So it just moved me in some way that I was, you know, stuck in my tracks thinking, wow. And that really is as simple as it is. It was just a reaction more than a, you know, it wasn't a tick list. I wasn't sort of going through anything, because if there was a tick list, they'd be getting crosses. Because are they ready? No. Do they look good? No. Are there any songs? No. So no, it wasn't like a big kind of bang, I guess. But for me, just something happened in that room that I just knew, you know, not a crystal ball. It wasn't like they're going to be huge, but I just knew I loved them. And if I loved them, surely somebody else would love them. So that was kind of my scientific belief back then.
Yeah, yeah. And you didn't start, I think, kind of working formally for them for like maybe 2-3 years after that. So what were you, like, what was your relationship with the band until you kind of officially started working with them? And what did you help them with? I think there's a few things.
Well, it's kind of weird because, and I don't mean this as a disservice to anyone else in the music industry, but I sort of do. Any bands that I liked enough that I wanted to sign, I kept in touch with. I still went to see them, you know, because otherwise I'm very sceptical in that way of, well, did you like them then? Because I don't get that. I'm a fan. So I, apart from the fact that, you know, it's kind of known now that my boss did pass on them eventually, well, quite quickly, but I introduced them to other people. So I was instrumental, kind of like a domino effect of introducing them to who published them and their lawyer, and their lawyer played it to Simon Williams, and Simon Williams put a record out. He also played it to Steve Lamacq, who gave them the first radio play. And then I played it to Caroline, who published them, and she played it to Dan Keeling, who signed them. And what I did discover many years later, he'd actually passed on their second demo. He'd not heard the first one. So he'd not heard the Safety EP. And when he did, he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So that was the point where he got confused, because he'd heard Ode to Deodorant, which, you know what, that is more of a holy grail than anything else the band have ever done, because there's so few copies of that knocking around. And it's nostalgic to me. I love it, but it's not great. So I can understand why someone would go, what's this song about deodorant? Which, when you know Chris Martin, you go, it is about deodorant. It's not like he's trying to be subtle and it's about something else. It's not. It's actually about deodorant. So I was just helping them. And then I had this kind of weird thing where I was working. I left that job, not because my boss passed on them, but it was definitely a big factor. And I went to work somewhere else and then somewhere else. And we just kept in touch. I even ended up working for Simply Red's management. And Simply Red's manager said, go back, talk to the manager and ask if we can do a co-managing project. And Phil, to his credit, said, oh, well, thanks, but I'm going to give it a go. So he did it on his own. So still hadn't got a deal. And then I started working at a publishing company, but then they were established then. And it was when I then moved out to work with the boss who'd passed on them and had a bit of a meltdown, to be honest. It was like a really rough time. And it was all very entangled in the music industry as a whole and how I felt. And I was having a poor me meltdown of, I did want to sign the band and I did feel bad that I hadn't been allowed to. And I just felt like I didn't know my place because nothing was taking off. And I was living in Bath. And so I was working remotely for a record label, London Records. And then basically Phil just came to visit me and said, do you want to work for us? Not exclusively. I still, for many, many years, had 2 or 3 other jobs. In fact, for the first 15 years, probably. And yeah, so I said, yeah, okay, what are you thinking? So the first job was, well, we have a fan club and we're not sure we want to keep it going because it's not official, but could you kind of take over and maybe do some formal thing? So it started as a newsletter and then it turned into an e-zine, and then that turned into working on the website and just kind of snowballed and grew. And then, of course, social media happened. And so I was looking after MySpace. Remember MySpace? And so, yeah, that started 2001. So this year, 2024, is my 26th year of knowing them. But I've been working with them since 2001, officially. So the role has changed so much over the years that I think most people go, what do you do again? It's like, well, bit of this, bit of that. So yeah, I've just been part of their furniture since, really. But yeah, I'm fan liaison mostly now, but I also do archives and a lot of things that people don't really know what I'm doing behind the scenes, but yeah.
And so what were they like as friends in their kind of early days, you know, especially those first few gigs when they weren't known by anyone? What were they like back then?
People aren't going to believe me when I say this, but they're not very different. Obviously, their circumstances are very different. But as people, they're very much the same. You know, Chris is still one of the funniest people I've ever met. Like, absolutely hilarious, like proper bellyache laughing at how funny he is. And, you know, they're all funny, but they're all really nice and sweet and generous and kind and just pretty self-effacing, and they've not really changed. They're all absolutely adorable. I love them. They're just the same to me, but yeah, but a bit taller and slightly more successful.
No, not true. Yeah, this idea, you know, they're clearly very nice people. How do you think this has helped them succeed and do so well as a band?
Well, I'd hope massively, because, you know, without naming names, you see bands go through periods where they can get either cocky or think that they're owed something or can be a bit nasty, or, you know, you'll never hear Chris, especially because he's at the forefront, you'll never hear him diss any other artist. I've never heard him say anything negative. In fact, there's times where I will say, don't like them. And he'll find something to sort of either change my mind or to see something good in something, because he's just that kind of person. You know, he's brought up that way. And he was also, I think he's a big fan as well. I think he appreciates, you know, the work, they all do, the work that goes into making the whole machinery, if you like, of continuing on tour and making albums and staying together and being friends. And I think their friendship, going back to the fact that, you know, they're friends and that's not changed. There was a clip just from like just over a week ago and this beautiful moment between the four of them. And you just see that all the time. You know, you see looks when they're performing and or leaving notes for Chris or, you know, things that they've done. And you just think that they've just got a special bond, like respect and love. And you can tell they still want to be together. And I think there's lots of artists where you think, are you just doing it for the money or are you just doing it because, you know? And that's, I think, definitely helped, because you can see it's genuine and you can't fake that.
And they've been, you know, good friends to you as well. And you know, lovely that story, you know, where Phil kind of helped you in a difficult period. But as you said earlier, you know, you've had like a great career and a fan got over them some time, but really these are just good friends of yours and they've been very nice to you.
Yeah. And sometimes I think, I know other people find that odd, and I can see that, because I'll stand in a stadium full of 80,000 people and every single show I'll have one song where I'm not watching the band, I'm watching the audience. I might even have my back to the stage, don't know. And I will just start looking at every single thing and look at people's reactions and smiles and cries, and I'll just go, wow, how did this happen? This is amazing. And just have that little bubble where for that one song, and it's not always the same song, and sometimes it sounds very Chris, it chooses me. So I'll go to the first show of a leg and go, oh, it's this song, this leg, okay. But I don't always know what that is. And then, you know, Yellow has won that quite a lot. But yeah, and I just stand there and think, gosh, look at all these people looking at these four guys that, and that just, you know, it's just Coldplay. But it isn't. It's huge and it's amazing and it's just very special to see that. But yeah, to me, they're just these four guys that are still, you know, the same four guys. But mad, isn't it? But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so when you discovered them, you're a scout. So firstly, like, what is a scout and how did you end up in that role? What were you like as a teenager? You were very interested in music, like, good to understand the story of how you got there as well.
Yeah, so prepare for me to embarrass myself. How was I as a kid? Right, so I was obsessed with pop music. I can't remember what age, but I've got an older brother, 6 years older than me. And so I'm not saying, he won't mind me saying, some of his record collection was really bad. If you want to be a music snob, my collection isn't great, so I shouldn't be. But so mum and dad had vinyls and we had a really good stereo system. I used to kind of play their records, which my dad might be like Steeler's Wheel. We had the Beatles and Rolling Stones and Queen. And mum would have that. And then Elaine Page, Crystal Gayle, all these kind of, you know, singers in the 70s. And then my brother would have anything from, I mean, ABBA was huge into ABBA. Nothing wrong with that. We loved ABBA in our house. But he'd also have the Sex Pistols, which I remember, do not touch that. Was something he used to say, and of course I did when he wasn't in the house. And a lot of punk stuff, but also Blondie, which kind of straddled going into pop. And then, I mean, God, then he liked a lot of pop. And then I grew up in the 80s. So my first thing was Altered Images I loved, and then Frankie Goes to Hollywood I became absolutely obsessed with. And through Holly Johnson, I kind of got on to Prince. Then that became an obsession. I used to write the charts down every week with a silver pen in a book. So when they did the chart countdown from 40 to 1, I would write down every single one with how many had gone up, how many had gone down, how many non-movers, new entries, the whole shebang. And would like obsess over that. And then, which by the way, back in the 80s was really interesting because you'd have things, because I was a Frankie fan, you'd have like Two Tribes was number one and Relax was about 38. And then over the next couple of weeks, it kept going up and up and up. And then they sat side by side, number one and two. And that wouldn't really happen now in streams. You know, it's not as exciting. So I remember my dad saying, if only you were paying as much attention to your schoolwork as you are about music. And then it's like, well, it didn't go too badly. Yeah, so I mean, it was okay at school. You know, I wasn't a bad student, but I was distracted, easily distracted, I would say. And I'd much rather be listening to music. Went to a lot of gigs because I lived quite near Manchester. So when I was old enough, I used to go to the Apollo and see anything and everything. Not the name of a band. And then, yeah, I didn't realise until a lot later that that might be something I could have pursued as a career. Otherwise, I would have done it a lot sooner. I started really late, started working with children. And then one day I thought, oh God, this five-year-old just said something to me that I'm not shocked by anymore. And I thought, that's terrible. What's happened? And it was quite shocking. So I just thought, maybe this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I had a big think and then just handed my notice in, thought, right, I'm going working in the music industry, and did a lot of research first, gathering names and addresses. And then literally just knocked on doors asking for a job. And then someone gave me a job. So it sounds really easy, but I know this sounds mad as well. It's really strange. I'm listening to Melanie C's audio book at the minute. And there's so many parallels with what was going on with me growing up and where we grew up and stuff. And I thought, wow, they had this unshakable belief that it was going to happen. And I think Chris Martin had that. And I had that. It didn't go the way I wanted, but then I didn't really know how that looked anyway. But I did know, no, I'm going working in the music industry. That wasn't like a plan B. That was plan A. So I couldn't fail, really. So yeah, the first day when I didn't come back with a job, I was quite surprised. No, not in a, sounds really kind of vain, vanity, whatever. It wasn't that. It was just, I thought I'd be able to just get a job. I didn't understand at all why not. But then people called me back and said, can you come and cover for this person's holiday? And do you want to come and help do this? And within 3 days, I had got a job.
Yeah. And so looking at, because you've done loads of different kind of roles and kind of worked on different projects for Coldplay over the years. So and one of these things is being a fan liaison. So what does that involve exactly? And is this something you still do today?
I think we've used that as an umbrella term, because when we were trying to define what do Debs do? It was don't know really. because I used to do things, like I say, on the website. I used to, if you think historically that I started writing like a fanzine, if you like, that was for the fans. I did the website for the fans. I did the forum for the fans. And then every single thread of everything I did would link back to the fans in some way. So it was a natural progression. So I was like doing the fan mail, physical fan mail and digital. Don't really do physical anymore, to be honest. I mean, there is a planet to save. But I kind of think, you know, that there's a lot of things, you know, like YouTube, closed captions, subtitles and things. Again, fans watch the video. So I guess I think that most of my job is fan liaison. But it does straddle other things because you end up dealing slightly with some customer service issues. And also, you know, without bringing the party down, a lot of what I see and read is heartbreaking. Like most of my days are spent reading emails from all manner of sad, tragic, heartbreaking stories. And I can't help everyone. And it's really awful because you want to be able to just go, oh yeah, let's do this for that person and that for that person and take this person there and give this person that and let them meet the band or go and see the band. Or and you just think, I could fill the 10 nights of Wembley, I could fill with people asking to go. So there's that side, which is quite hard. It can be quite, I'm not a sponge, so don't get me wrong. It's a privilege to do it. I love it. But it sometimes you have to kind of take a step back and go, I can't read any more of that today because it's really quite exhausting to put the energy in. It's kind of like, if you like, looking after my mental health whilst listening to other people's is so, it's like a fine balance of really wanting to help people and realizing I just can't. And that's also hard because I don't share with the band because there's too many, and that's the whole point of me being a gatekeeper. And it was my idea, so it's all, you know, I one day suggested, I think we should have a contact form where the fans can write because we don't have a forum, and I think that'd be really nice so that we can do this. And then I didn't really envisage just the volume of email requests and things that come in, but also equally it feels really special to have that connection and be able to reply to people or listen to people. I can't reply to everyone, but you know what I mean. It's like, so that's lovely. But as I say, quite hard some days. But also I do lots of fun things too. So I get to do the archives, you know, and I've spent a long time looking at like video clips and listening to songs and looking at photos and sourcing things for various projects that we're doing. You know, some people don't know about yet and some people have seen. So there's a lot of things, you know. I'm sometimes part of the judging panel. You know, if we have open a contest in Perth, for example, that'll be me watching all the videos. But again, I love the fact that they trust me enough, especially the management team, but they trust me enough to know that I know what they'd like or kind of, you know. And then watching those things come to fruition is great because I don't care if people don't know what I do. I mean, to some extent, it'd be nice, you know, to know this. Yes, I do things, but I actually love watching what I do happen and think, yeah, I love that. It's great. So it's a real honour, privilege to be part of such a wonderful team. And it is a massively wonderful team. They're just great people surrounding them, and they're good at picking good people, so, and keeping them around. Yeah.
How many people are in the team that kind of that support Coldplay?
I get asked that a lot. There's a lot of people help this happen, which you can imagine, you know. There's management teams and there's the crew, and then there's obviously the tour itself is huge, so there's a lot of people. And there's still people, I even said this the other day, I still meet people that I don't know and they don't know me. They might have heard of me. I met a guy yesterday and he said, oh, hiyo, I think I've met, and I said, no, we've never met. And I said, what's your name? And he told me, and he's been with the band for 15 years and we've never met. Yesterday was the first time. And we swapped email addresses because we were like chatting about stuff. And I can't believe we've never met. And it's just so weird that you just, your paths don't always cross, and especially in huge stadiums or, you know, schedules that are just absolutely crazy. So yeah, there's loads of people I have still yet to meet.
As you said, there's lots of people messaging about requests, you know, to meet the band or so and stuff like this. But are there also a lot of people sharing about how Coldplay's music has like helped them through a difficult period? Is this something you hear as well?
That's one of the best things. And I think sometimes when I initially get anything that will say, dear Coldplay or dear Chris and the band or whatever, and I know it's not intended for me, or there might be, I don't know who's reading this, but there's this really strange phenomenon that I love that sometimes people probably know that it's not going to reach the band, but they just want to share something. And when I read it, and a lot of the time where I go, I get that, I've been there, or I felt that for this band or another artist. And the fact that it moves people, which I do connect with, is just wonderful. Because, and again, it's not always lovely stories, but if one person writes to say that song really means a lot to me because it got me through this or anything like that, then it's just amazing. But I get those a lot. Yeah, I love that, but loads and loads and loads of those. It's great.
Yeah, and you've got some of these kind of quite big fan sites for Coldplay, like Coldplay Extra and Coldplaying and a few others. What do you think this says about the band and their music that they've got this kind of such cult following and so many enthusiastic fans?
One of my friends said Coldplay's her therapy. Whenever she's just not feeling too happy, she just puts them on and it makes her feel better straight away. Or if you want to cry, you can fix you one and cry. And so you can, you know, you can go Coldplay for all seasons. And I see that with the fans and the fact, you know, I know fans who've got married and had kids, and there's fans that are pen pals from around the world and then eventually meet. And then they'll all get together at a show, you know, proper gig buddies, and then they'll get things and send them to each other in friendship bracelets and all of that community. And it's just kind of, I guess, still for me, because I didn't grow up with that, like that connection is quite incredible. But again, it's the music that brings them all together. But also what I find fascinating is, like, I'm going to tell you this story, even though it's going to sound really weird, but it's not weird at all. It's because it's not. I took my best friend from primary school to a Coldplay Extra meetup in Dublin because she lives in Dublin. And when we got there, I said, look, I might just have to, I can't believe I'm telling this. I might have to warn you about this before we go in. And she went, why? I went, so I'm kind of like, because they know who I am, you might find it really funny how this is going to go. I said, because I will be signing autographs and having my picture taken. And she was thinking it was funny. And then we got into it, there's some people standing at the bottom of the stairs. Are they waiting for you? And I went, yeah. And then they gave us cakes, but they had my name on, but they had her name on as well, but they didn't know her name. So it said Debsy's mate. And she was like, this is amazing. I went, I know, I told you. She went, no, but I can't. She said, she was tearing up because she saw what I was trying to explain to her about the love in that room for the band and each other and me to an extent, where I said, it's just joyful. And obviously people listening to Coldplay music, wearing Coldplay tees and all that. And yeah, for my friend who was kind of outside looking in, I found that really interesting to be reminded of, yeah, that's what this community is. This is what this band is. This is what happens. And we had the best time. We were there for a few hours. And also what makes me really laugh is because social media is so accessible, the fans that I know, some of them still can't understand how I knew who they are. And it's like, we're just human beings. Why would I not know who you are? You post all the time about the band. And of course, I'm going to see it. You know, that's how social media and the algorithm works. But yeah, it's like, you know, I know people by their first names and where they live. And, you know, I know some of their stories, personal stories. And that's so special. And it's also quite unusual, I think. I'm sure I'm not the only band fan liaison in the world. But I do sometimes think that my job is so niche that, you know, is there another me? You know, does this happen everywhere? Because I don't know if it does. But I'd still find it like incredible if I get the chance to go and like hang out with fans. I think that's really cool. Yeah, because, you know, it's not something that you'd automatically think would happen, but I think it's lovely. Because I'm a fan, you know? I'm one of them, so.
Yeah, they definitely seem a very set of lovely fans. It's nice your friend got that cake as well.
I know, it's so sweet.
It's hard to imagine what your life would be like if you hadn't been involved with this band, but what are some of the kind of key ways you think this hanging around with the band and working with them for so long has influenced like your life? Obviously it's impacted the work you've done, but you as a person, being around these people and being on this journey, how do you think this has shaped and changed your worldview and your beliefs and so on?
An interesting question, because on the one hand, there's a lot of what ifs, and I'm not usually a what if person, but sliding doors. If I'd not been in that room that night, Phil thinks he wouldn't have managed them beyond there because he thought it's not happening. I've no doubt that they would have still gone on to be something, but I guess all of the, you know, the chain of events in any event is what leads it to be the thing. And I don't know how different their life would be or mine. But I do sort of think what's interesting, because like, you know, Chris has openly said, you know, without you, we'd be nowhere. And if you'd not been this, and it's all through you. And it's like, I don't think so. I didn't write any of the songs. But I think what's interesting is, you know, I don't know. There was something you'd said at the beginning of that where I'd kind of tapped into something different, which was something to tie in with the book, where when I wrote that book, I didn't realise I was writing my 20-year anniversary too. And when I had finished it, I went, wow, what a journey I've been on. It was like a scrapbook of my life as well as theirs. So in that respect, yes, I've been able to travel to some places I probably wouldn't have been before. I don't tour with them, but they have taken me along for a few rides. I remember Chris's dad once thanking me, saying, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been able to have breakfast with Olivia Newton-John. But it's been the opportunities that they've had and the life they've had. I can't take credit for that, but to be along for it, for some of it, to watch it and witness it, has been so amazing. And as much as I had a part to play in some of it, I'm quite sure that, you know, let's put it this way, as much as all those years of me wishing my boss had said yes, I don't think they would have written Yellow, because they wouldn't have been in that studio with that producer at that time with that meteor shower. I think everything happens for a reason. And I think once I realised that and kind of got over my sadness and frustration about not being able to work with them, I mean, I don't know if people swear on your podcast and this isn't swearing, but
feel free to swear if you'd like.
I might have been the biggest arsehole in the world if I'd have signed Coldplay. I might have got too big for my boots. I might have been living in a massive mansion with three cars outside, you know, being a twat. I might have really changed. So maybe it was humbling to stay in a kind of non-participating role in that sense. You know, I didn't have anything to do with the recording process. So in a way, I like to say I got all the good bits, because, you know, I got the fun part. And yet, it took me quite a long time as well to sort of almost value my position in that. Because I guess when you've done something pivotal, there's an element of no imposter syndrome, because you didn't sign them. And therefore, well, what did you do? And it's like, well, no, I did this. And I'm really proud of that part I played, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, you're like, oh, do they owe me this job? Why? Do they just feel like they should have given me a job? And I'm like, no, I actually do something that I think does bring value to their brand. And I hate using that word, but what I mean by that is, because they're so lovely and so grateful and so humble and so very appreciative of every single person who buys a ticket and a t-shirt and music and all of that, I think it sort of does make sense that they've got a me, because then that's a big full circle of feeling like, oh yeah, that's the value they place on everyone who loves them, and therefore everybody who's made that possible. And having that team and that connection is wonderful. So I don't know where I'd be or how I'd be, but I've no doubt that it's made me better as well. It's a little bit like the Ted Lasso effect. It's like, I'm more Roy Kent, but be more Ted. So being around nice people makes you nice. And it reminds you all the time to be grateful. And there's a lot of Chris rubs off on people. It's very easily done. And I'm glad for that.
I wanted to ask now about your brilliant book. So I've got a copy here. So your book is called Life in Technicolor, A Celebration of Coldplay, which I finished recently. And yeah, firstly, it really is just a brilliant, like a really relaxing, lovely book to read. A very kind of intimate, personal, behind the scenes kind of look at the band and their journey. You can tell it's actually done from someone who's known them from the start and a friend of them. So yeah, firstly, what inspired you to write this book? And what did you like learn whilst writing the book and kind of reflecting on the journey you've had and the band's had throughout the last 20, 25 years?
Thank you for saying that. I think it's beautiful. I'm really glad it exists in the world, but it's not really meant to. I had got two incarnations way too soon of books that I was writing, which I still have all the notes for. And then I knew it wasn't the right time because I knew the band were kind of like, not yet, you know, that's something that might come, but not yet. And then there was a friend of mine and we became friends through him wanting to publish a book with Matt McGinn, another roadies. And I very much said, I actually write. I kind of like to send you something. And he said, oh, cool, send me something. And it wasn't to do with the band. So long story short, I did actually send him something and he liked it and he pitched it and it was going to get written by me and made by them. Anyway, it didn't. He left and started working somewhere else, but we stayed friends. Went to his wedding, all of that. And then one day he said, oh, I've had a call from, I'm going to name them Carlton, it's on the book, and they want to know if you want to write a Coldplay book. And I said, well, no, you know the situation. And he said, yeah, I'd said that. And they said, well, we're going to do it anyway. I said, well, you do it. He said, well, I don't want to do it without you. And I said, well, I'm not doing it because I know it's not the right time. And then he said, well, I have gone back and they did say, yes, we're doing it. So I then went to Phil and said, okay, bit of a weird situation. There's going to be a Coldplay book and we've got a choice here of either I do it and then we've got some control over what it looks like, as in, you know, it's going to be factually great, or I don't have anything to do with it. So that was pitched to, you know, the band, and it was like, yeah, okay, do it. So I embarked on this book, and at first the idea was my friend was going to write it and I was just going to kind of fact check it a bit, maybe interview some people. But it turns out I had so much stuff, like my archives, interviews I'd done with the band in the early days, and obviously access to a lot of people, but a lot of pictures, a lot of content. And one of my friends who I wrote scripts with said, hang on a minute, this is your story. You're a writer. Why are you not writing it? And I thought, you know what? That would be a missed opportunity. I should write this book. So I said to this co-writer, I'm writing the book. You can do the chapters on the band members and I'm doing the book. The publishers then turned around and said, well, nobody wants to stock your book because it's unofficial. And I said, yeah, but it was never official. And they said that it killed it. And I said, did you tell them what's in it? Like, you know, this Chris Martin's personal things in there. And they didn't. So then, you know, I'd worked out how I wanted the cover to be, what the inside should look like. I'd placed all the pictures. I was really pleased with the end result. But whilst I was doing that, the editor said, oh yeah, well, when this book idea was pitched to us, and I was like, I'm sorry, what? And my friend, so-called friend, hadn't been approached by them to approach me. He'd gone to them and said, hey, I know this girl, she's a friend of mine, I can get her to do this, 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 and said, and the band will do this, this, this. And we haven't spoken since. We got through the process as friends. We celebrated the book launch as friends. And sadly, I'm a bit of, I'm very fiercely loyal. And I think if somebody crosses that line, I just can't forgive it. And to put me in a position with the people I love the most in the world that could have not only lost me my job, but embarrassed them if it had gone wrong, more on them, I would have hated that. But the good news is, and we didn't make any money from it, and it ended up getting pulped because they wouldn't sell it back to me. But anyway, it's a thing of beauty and the band think it's great. So I don't care. It's just the fact that I got a text from Chris Martin one day going, "Dems, you lovely thing, this book is wonderful." And I was like, that's all I need. Because I'd already seen the guys going, "Oh, I've been signing copies of your book." And I was like, "Oh no, that's really embarrassing." They went, no, I don't mind. I was like, it's just weird. It's like, that would be like me signing a copy of your album, but okay. So I love it. I really do love it. But it came about in such a, yeah, there's a bit of a sour taste left in how that came about.
One thing I did want to ask you about briefly was just this new album. They've got this new album, Moon Music. I saw in the inside cover of the CD that it says Celestial Navigation by Devs Wild. Why? What did that mean exactly? And why are you doing Celestial Navigation?
Well, it's a very good question. I mean, when I first saw that, I was really touched by that. And I'm thinking of getting business cards made up with Celestial Navigator on them and then try and explain what it is. I think, I'm assuming obviously because it's called Moon Music and therefore the celestial bit ties into the moon. I don't think there's any particular navigation that I'm doing specifically. I think what they're generally saying there is because I've been there for so long and I do give my genuine feedback on things and always have everybody's best interests at heart, them and the fans and things like that. I guess in a way they just wanted to say something that wasn't just crediting my role, which has, obviously we've talked about fan liaison and the other one that's hilarious is web ambassador, which I have no idea what that means either. So don't technically know what a celestial navigator does, but I suspect it's just their really generous, kind way of saying thank you for just believing in us and still being around through this journey, I think. Yeah.
And I'm intrigued what you think of the new album. Obviously, their style has really changed over time. So what do you think of the new album and what do you think of kind of where they are now? The music is, very different in some ways to previous albums. And for me, this I love this new album. There's some kind of more fun, upbeat songs, but I like the kind of more relaxed, ethereal ones, like The End of Jupiter's Lovely with a bit about rainbows and stuff like that. So yeah, intriguing to take on the album and kind of where they are now style-wise.
There's some beautiful moments like that. And I think this is what's interesting as well. There's two things I'll say. Chris has recently said something about anybody that hasn't a massive opinion on someone not sounding like they used to or whatever. It's more on them. You know, every artist should be allowed to develop and grow and change. And it's been 25 years. Why shouldn't they be doing whatever the hell they want to? And I'm loving the reception this album's got specifically because it's kind of obviously Music of the Spheres Part 2. But I loved the fact that when an album comes out, I'm just happy that I don't have to listen to it on headphones anymore because I'm like, oh my God, I can listen to it. And not care that the neighbours might go, hang on a minute, it's that Coldplay. But also this album, unlike previous ones, I'd heard so much of it because I've been watching some archive footage of various things. And I just never got bored of hearing any part of it, like for the 100th time or whatever. And I couldn't wait to sort of when watching things build up and then getting the final tracks and listening to it and seeing what tracks made it and which tracks didn't. And then hearing Moon Music, and I hate to say it, but I don't think I'm ever going to be able to hear that song without crying. I can't help it. It just does something to me every time. I went to the Moon Music listening party at the Shoreditch Church thing and I was crying in there. I was like, I knew it was going to happen because I can't listen to it without crying. And it just... it's like Coloratura has had a child and it's Moon Music and it's beautiful. But yeah, any of those moments and the piano on All My Love and just the vocals on certain bits and then the fun they're having on Good Feelings. And there's just so much in there. And it is, again, it's like a really joyful album that just has so much texture and layers to it that I love. And I love that when I watch people's different reaction to certain tracks of what's their favourite song and stuff. And you just can't predict who's going to like what because, we're all different. But it's just, I'm really excited to see, the next leg to see, you know, how much maybe the set list will change and how it will work. It's been creeping in, obviously, putting some new songs in as it's been going. So, yeah, I'm just excited. I'm always excited, though, because I never know what's coming. I never know, you know, what the plan is. It's just being part, again, like I say, you just, I wouldn't have known in 1998 that I'd be looking at Moon Music, for example. I probably thought it would be Parachutes Part 10, because I guess a lot of people just do that. And so, you know, there are, you know, there's lots of artists that do this. But I think it's a testament to them to keep changing it up and doing what they want to do as well. I think that's really important.
And I think, if I'm right, I've seen Chris say lately that you can actually imagine a last album now, which is maybe two albums away. How will you feel when the last album kind of comes to an end?
Yeah, my friend in the music industry is a massive Coldplay fan, and we talk about this a lot because, as lots of fans will say, we've heard Chris say this before. Oh, we're only doing two more and then we're going to call it a day. And then he said it this time and it was just like, oh, no, definitely there's a plan. And I watched the Zane Lowe interview and got really quite emotional because I thought, oh my God, it's like, this is all coming to an end, not the end, just one end. And he did say at some interview recently that album 12 will come before album 11, which is such a Chris thing. But, and he kind of like, who cares? No rules. You know, we're in the middle of a tour that an album has just dropped in the middle of a tour. So, you know, they do what they like. But yeah, I think on the one hand, I think it's sad because I think fans will feel some kind of loss and confusion. Me personally, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's plenty for me to be carrying on with behind the scenes that, you know, I am not particularly worried. And if not, I shall certainly be suggesting that. But no, I think if that's the plan, and then that is the plan, and there'll be a reason, and it will all make sense, as Chris says, in the end. So it's just watch this space. And there's a tiny part of me that thought, that feels quite sad, but not if it's not the end, which apparently I'm led to believe, and he's told us that it isn't the end, because he said that they're going to carry on touring and stuff. And I can't imagine. See, that's the thing. I remember years and years ago, and I mean like 2002, asking Chris, what would you do if, like, you stopped doing this? Would you just, like, go solo? And he was going, God, no, this is it. And I think that's it. The fact they all love each other and are still together and love what they do is just brilliant. At least we'll never have that imploding, falling out, splitting up and messy end. This feels like this is going to be lovely because they're just going to do what they love doing and yet still be together, but maybe no more albums. So, yeah, it's quite exciting and strange, but yeah.
And just before I ask you one last question, I do want to ask, actually, you've got the two beautiful things of you, actually. Could you tell us what each of these are? I'm intrigued.
Yes, yeah, so I brought my very first, well, I say my very first disc, because the first disc for Parachutes is technically my second disc, because they spelt my name wrong on the first one. So I ended up with another one. And yeah, I got that. And I remember really clearly being invited into Parlophone's office that day and thinking, wow, I've never had one of these before. And it's amazing. And then this one, which I don't know if you'll be able to see, this is very special because Milo Zarlito had an M and an X on the cover. And then they just put everybody's initials on. So I thought I would bring that along because it's just such a cool thing. But yeah, I have a few of these, and I have to confess that my flat used to look like a shrine because it was all that was on the walls. So now I've kind of minimised and I only have three now. I have the Viva is on the mantelpiece because it's huge. But yeah, I'm very proud to have some acknowledgement of, again, my little part to play in the domino thing.
Yeah, well, you definitely deserve it.
Thank you.
So, yeah, final question. I don't know if you know this, but I ask every guest the same question at the end of each episode to round things off. So yeah, the question is, Devs, what do you think it means, given all your experience and life so far, what do you think it means to live a good life?
Well, and again, without sounding too cheesy, I think that could be a twofold answer, because one is to stay true to yourself and do what you want. You've only got your one life. You should absolutely do the things that make you happy and fulfilled, you know, live with no regrets, you know, regret what you do rather than what you don't do. I think that's important. But it would be remiss of me to not say, at the same time of doing this that sounds selfish, to really consider other people in your decisions, because I feel that, you know, I hate the word selfish, because if people say that person is so selfish, that usually means they're just doing something that you want them to do the opposite for you. Therefore, it's a bit of a juxtaposition. However, if somebody lives their life without regard for the people of actions and consequences, then I would hate that I ever did that. Do you know what I mean? I feel like to be a good person is to be good to yourself and to other people. So I think it's a healthy balance. And I would say that I'm a Libran, but a healthy balance of at least giving yourself the best shot to have the best life. For me, that means having the most fun possible. And I try really hard to focus on being happy and positive and surrounding myself with good things and good people.
Well, Debs, thank you so much. This has been a really lovely conversation. Thank you for this great book and for all the work you've done on Coldplay over the years, and for sharing your story today. And most importantly, I guess, for discovering Coldplay and bringing them to so many people around the world.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching this episode. If you enjoyed it, please consider hitting the subscribe button below, and I hope to see you here again.